Hi, and welcome to Cloud Cover. My name's Nick Harris, and today I'm joined by my beautiful assistant.
Chris Reisner, it's great to be here.
Yep, so you've been on the show a couple times before.
I've been here a couple times with you and, you know, the former Nathan, but yep. It's great to be more of a regular now.
Yep. Nate's moved over into Azure Engineering as a senior PM. I'm not sure if you watched a couple episodes back where that happened. But now it's Chris and I, and today we're joined by Stephen Sotiliano.
Yep.
Got it right? Can you tell the audience a little bit about what you're going to show in the main segment today after the news?
Sure. So I work on Azure Engineering, and I'm going to show off some of the monitoring and management features that we've recently been releasing in the Azure portal. It includes things like autoscale, alerting, ops logs, basically stuff to help you run your service better.
Yeah, and these are all new, right? So about a month ago or so, a lot of this was sort of released.
Yeah. A lot of it was released just at build.
Yep. So a couple months. A couple months ago, but still some very cool stuff. Yeah. So let's jump into the news, Chris, and then we'll jump into the main segment. So the first news item we've got here is an update from Nir. So Nir works on the Azure Websites team, and you can see that this post is around configuring dynamic IP address restrictions in Windows Azure Websites. So this is a feature of IIS 8. So basically what allows us to do, or what this update is about, they've just added support. So Windows Azure Websites supports this module. And what you can do with it within your web config here is you can go off and configure dynamic IP restrictions. So here's an example of one here. This small amount of config basically enables you to deny if a request originating from one IP address has more than 10 concurrent requests in flight at one point in time, this module will go off and deny that request, like for an 11th one, say.
So what sort of scenario do you think this would be useful for?
I think it's sort of useful for scenarios just where you want to throttle or limit the amount of requests coming from an individual IP address. So if you've got a service and you know that really, you know, something hitting that service from, you know, an external IP address is only really meant to do one or two requests at any one time, you know, you can put this on to sort of, I guess it would help restrict DOS attacks and that kind of thing.
Great.
But it goes in a bit further, so there's a lot more different sort of options in the way you can configure it. So in this case, there's a request interval of 2 seconds here. So this one basically says in any 2 second period, that IP can have up to 10 concurrent requests. So, you know, you can sort of limit it to a period of time. Moving down, there's other configurations here where you can combine both. So you can have up to 10 concurrent requests in flight at any one point in time, or up to 20 requests over a 5 second period. And it goes on and says, you know, you can configure the actual HTTP response that's returned back once this is blocked on that particular IP. And it's available in Azure Websites, and you can also use it within, you know, your web roles on cloud services as well.
Great.
All right. So, and in this post, we've got Hashi, a fellow member on our team, that's sort of focusing on architectural guidance and sort of cloud-based patterns that you can apply when you're building out your solutions on Windows Azure. So it sort of shows you how to structure your solutions such that they're sort of decoupled, scalable, maintainable, and testable. So he's calling this recipe VVM. I'm not sure why he chose that particular name. It probably says it a lot more if you read through all of his posts about it. You can see the architectural guidance here in terms of this is a diagram of what he's sort of pulling together, and there's a nice V-slice here. If we go over into one of his next posts, you can see it in action. So here he's defining some data contracts for a WCF service. Go down, and he has these entity processing units and mocked file entity, whole bunch of classes within his framework that allow you to go off and implement this. So comes through, he's got that. He's also got a chaos namespace. So what you can do here is introduce things sort of similar to the Netflix Chaos Monkeys. And it's sort of nicely defined. You can easily go in and introduce delays and latency into your requests.
And for those people that aren't really familiar with what Chaos Monkey is, can you tell us a little bit?
You go for it.
Sure. So, you know, it's basically, you know, like a stress test, make sure that whatever your service is, just, you know, you can just throw everything at it possible, and it's just going to make sure things don't go down. But it is going to actually try and take down individual pieces as well, just kind of make sure your system will recover.
Yep. So at the moment, his implementation is only sort of very thin. So he's only got a random delay monkey and a random failure monkey built into this. But it's sort of the start of something which could be, you know, quite useful for people. So it's definitely worth watching there. So let's jump onto some here that Chris found.
Yeah, so this first one, it's the Windows Azure Speed Test, and basically it's a website somebody put together to test out blob storage latency. So there's a JavaScript client there that's basically pinging a blob in each of the different data centers that supports blob storage, and then it reports back the latency. So as you can see here, the closest data center to us is West US because we're on the West Coast. And that actually has the lowest amount of latency, again, because we're closest to it. But it kind of just shows you, you know, what the latency would be depending on which data center you're reaching out to for blobs.
Yep.
Pretty cool and nice, you know, nice graph there.
Yep.
And the second one is actually another member of our team, Corey Fowler. He put together this Windows Azure Websites cheat sheet. And right now, it's from a language perspective, it shows a lot of the PHP stuff that you can do. So how you can deploy your own version of the runtime, do specific PHP extensions, stuff like that. But then as you go further down on the page, it's actually a very, very expansive walkthrough of the different CLI tools for websites. And this kind of, you know, shows you pretty much everything you can do with a CLI when it comes to websites. So, you know, doing repositories, setting up your SSL configuration, just tons of really cool functionality here, and all, you know, documented in a, you know, very easy to find, very easy to read sort of way. So, you know, really great stuff.
Yeah, awesome. So I think we'll probably jump to the main segment here.
Sounds great.
And we'll have Steven show us alerts, operational logs, and autoscale.
Yep.
Perhaps if Bob feels up to it, there's a long, long tradition of publicly outing the new host or co-host or whatever you want to call yourself, assistant.
And, assistant.
I got promoted.
Oh, I see.
So if Bob's feeling up to it, maybe we'll get a few statics of the search for the new host of the show.
Hopefully it wasn't too painful.
A little bit.
And now, our feature presentation.
So, I'm going to start off with alerting. So, when you come to the portal, you can notice that there's a little yellow warning icon down at the bottom. So, that means something somewhere has gone wrong, right?
So, you've already got an alert configured.
Yep, yep. In this case, when you click on it, it says there's one or more active alerts. In this case, we just have one alert. Mm-hmm. So, I can click on it, and it shows me all of the alerts in the subscription that are currently active.
Right. So for anyone that wanted to create an alert, which you've done just prior to here, yep, where can they find that within the portal?
Great. So if you scroll down to the bottom, you'll see there's a new extension here called Management Services.
Right.
When you click on Management Services, the first tab is Alerts.
Awesome.
So that's kind of where you can see all of your alerts.
Okay.
And to add a new one, you just click the Add Rule button here at the bottom. So I can actually just walk through that.
Okay.
So for an alert, you define a name. So I just say, Michael alert. You choose the service that you want to alert on.
Okay.
So let's say I have some virtual machines.
So alerts are supported across what service types?
Yeah. So currently, there's cloud services and virtual machines support any metric that those services have. So
yep,
CPU, memory, anything like that.
Okay.
And then for mobile services and websites, we support endpoint metrics. So those are things like what's the response time, what's the availability.
Okay.
We don't quite support every metric on the website yet, but we're always working on expanding the types of things that we support.
Okay.
So for VMs, for example, you'll see a list of all the metrics that VM supports. So once the internet catches up to me, you'll see CPU, disk, I/O, network, those types of metrics that are available. So yeah. you can see here are all the metrics available for a VM. The same metrics you see on graphs in the portal, you can see here. So if I want to be alerted when the CPU percentage is greater than 20%, let's say. We also let you choose kind of the time window over which we evaluate the alert. So for default, it's just 5 minutes. We just look at a very narrow time window. So that means if there's a sudden spike, you'll get alerted within 5 minutes.
So is this, so average over the last 5 minutes. So if you're, in this case, greater than 20% CPU usage for five minutes.
Yep.
Then we'll get an alert.
Yeah, and it doesn't have to be always. So it's like as long as inside the 20 minutes, the average is greater. So it could be 40 and 0 and then 40 and 40 and 40, and that's about 20.
Okay.
What sort of different time settings can you use there?
So we support up to an hour. So between 5 minutes to an hour. So basically, if you want to know really when there are big trends in your service, you would want to go to an hour. If you want just short, informative alerts, then you could go to 5 minutes.
Okay, great.
Or anywhere in between. So for alerts, today we support the ability to send an email when the alert gets triggered.
Okay.
So there's a convenient checkbox here that is just send it to all of the service administrators and co-admins.
Right.
So if you happen to have access to a subscription, you'll get an email to whatever email address that is.
Yep.
You also can enter a custom email address here, you know, whatever you want.
And out of interest, like I was playing with this the other day. Do we, like, you could obviously send an email to a DL of, you know, the ops guys or whoever should be maintaining this. Can we comma separate or semicolon separate emails?
Today we
here?
Only support one email address in this text box.
Okay.
In the future, you know, you can imagine that you could comma separate it. But
so until then, you could basically, you know, just use a DL or something like that.
Yep.
Okay.
The other thing you could do if you really want to get crazy is you could enter, so if you have like an SMS gateway for text messages, you can enter your phone number like at att.net.
Yes.
Or you could, if you have like a third-party paging system like PagerDuty, you can set up an email gateway there so you can enter the PagerDuty email gateway.
Right.
And then when the alert gets triggered, it'll fire an event into the PagerDuty system and then, you know, page whoever's on call.
Okay.
So
that's cool.
Even with just one email address, you can get
a lot of things.
Quite a different set of behaviors.
I think SMS is probably quite useful in terms of that scenario. So send an email, that sends an SMS. Cool.
Yep. So I'm not going to do that one. But when you click this, it'll create the alert and it'll list it along with all the other alerts. So I've actually set up two already. So you can see we have a filters up at the top that allow you to see, you know, what alerts active, where disabled, all of that. I have one alert that's not activated, so this is a response time alert.
Okay.
So for response time, basically this is the kind of an outside in ping. So it checks to see how fast does your website respond. And here we show the threshold that I've defined. So if I have more than 100 milliseconds, if it takes more than 100 milliseconds for the response to come back, I want to be informed. But you can see here the response time has been fine, so I haven't gotten an alert.
Okay.
The high CPU one, on the other hand, this one has been triggered. And you can see when an alert is triggered, it gives you a little history of what the history for that particular alert is. So here you can see it's been since 10 a.m. The alert has been triggered here for high CPU.
Okay.
And I'm not certain why the graph isn't showing up, but...
Is it because it's only 1 hour? I don't know. There it is.
It just took a little while to load. So yeah, so you can see here, we also say how long is the current alert active, so 3 minutes. But you can imagine there'd be a full history here. So we show threshold and the value. So if you have high CPU on your service, there's probably something you need to do to fix it.
Right.
It may mean there's like a code bug or something like that, but it may just mean you have far more users than you anticipated, right?
Yeah.
So one of the new features we have that we released at Build as well is autoscale. So if I navigate to this cloud service, you can see there, we also show on the dashboard of that service that there's an active alert, so you can bring it back. But when you go to the cloud service, you can see we've added a section called autoscale.
Right.
So what autoscale does is it adjusts the load of your service or just the performance of your service to coordinate with the load that you have.
All right.
So if I have high CPU, presumably I'm going to want to scale up. Now, for this cloud app here, I've actually already set up autoscale, one type of autoscale called scheduled autoscale. So what scheduled autoscale does is it just looks at the time of day and adjusts the number of instances based on the time of day.
Right. So that's probably for workloads where you have, you know, a known spike at, you know, maybe at 5 p.m. or maybe sort of 9 a.m. or something like that. Right?
Exactly. So here, if I click on the setup schedule times, you can see that I've set up scheduling between 9 and 5 p.m.
Right.
So during the day, I want to have more instances than at night because not many people come to my website at night, let's say.
Right.
It turns out that my CPU is high, so I've actually gotten even more load than I expected.
All right.
So what I can do is I can, even though I've set up schedules, I can also scale by CPU. So I'm going to say I want to, say, go between 3 and 5.
All right.
So during the day, I have day selected. It'll actually adjust me between 3 and 5 instances rather than just keep me at exactly 3 instances.
All right.
I can also go in and I could change it at night. So if I go to nighttime, right now I have just one instance set.
Right.
I could say I want between one and two instances at night.
Yep.
So it's a pretty easy way to adjust the capacity of your service.
And the metric here in this case is just CPU. So if it exceeds, I assume, the 80%, then mm-hmm. it scales up.
Yep.
Until, you know, the load is reduced enough.
So yeah, so we give you the ability to adjust what is kind of acceptable CPU.
Yep.
So the 80%, just as you said, is at what point I'll scale up. And then 60%, if the average across all of the instances in this web role is below 60%, we'll take a scale down action.
Okay. And out of interest here, so let's say that the scenario is running and we've got three instances,
mm-hmm.
and then it exceeds this threshold of 80% of the CPU.
Mm-hmm.
We got three instances. Does it increment by one and reevaluate, or does it just go straight to 5?
So the increment is something you can define here.
Okay.
So here we have scale up by. So I can scale up by one at a time. I can scale up by two at a time.
Right.
By however many I desire.
Okay.
Likewise, you can scale down by increment if you want.
Okay.
The other control that we offer is the ability to set the wait time after a scale action.
All right.
So if I don't want there to be a lot of scale actions in quick succession, I could increase this wait time and say only take an action once every, say, 90 minutes.
Okay.
And that way, I won't have a lot of scale actions. So if I have somewhat erratic load, but I don't actually want to map the scale exactly to that load, I can kind of average it out over a longer period of time.
Okay.
So here, why don't we actually turn this on? So I'm going to reduce the wait time. And right now, I think our CPU is above 90%. So what I should expect to see is a scale-up action.
Okay.
So I'm going to save this. Oh, looks like something went wrong. The autoscale engine runs about every 5 minutes. So it can take a little time to take effect, but I'll show you some other things while we're waiting.
And that affects both the scale up and the scale down, so every 5 minutes it's evaluating both those.
Yep. Every 5 minutes it evaluates all of the conditions of your service. So one of the first things it looks at actually is your service already scaling? So we don't want to take a scale action while a previous scale action is still running.
Yep.
So we won't do that. So the other feature we support for cloud services besides schedule and CPU is also scaling by queue.
Right.
So here I have a worker role, and for worker roles, generally you're going to have either a service bus queue or an Azure storage queue, and you're going to pull items off that queue and perform some operations on top of them.
Mm-hmm.
So to do that, first I choose the storage account that my work is in, and then I choose the queue. Once you do this, you have to define kind of what the volume of work that an individual worker role can handle.
Right.
So in this case, I checked just beforehand that I have about 25 items in my queue. So if I put 5 here, that means that it's going to try to scale me to about 5 workers.
But it will cap at 4. Right?
Cap at 4. So actually, why don't I increase this?
Yep.
And just to kind of show, I can also show I'll scale it by 3 at a time.
Right.
So right now I'm at 2. So since my target is so low and my current queue count is so high, it's going to scale me up by 3. Once I hit the save button, or within 5 minutes of hitting the save button.
Yep. So they're basically two really useful metrics for scaling there.
Mm-hmm.
CPU usage and queue.
Yep. And for queue, we support service bus namespaces and storage accounts today. But really, these metrics are the most common that people have asked for. In the future, we may add other metrics.
Right.
People have asked for memory, for example.
Okay.
So we don't have any way of scaling on that today, but you know, in the future, you can imagine we'd add more.
Yeah. Out of interest, how is this data captured and published to, you know, the whatever the auto-scaling engine is in, within Windows Azure?
Yeah, so the data comes from the same place that the monitoring charts get their data from.
Right.
So we have a big storage account, basically a series of storage accounts that store the metrics from your services. And it's just an internal storage account that we have. And all of this data gets stored in that account. In addition, you also could set up diagnostics on your own cloud service and store it to your own storage account.
Okay.
So we also can get metrics from there as well.
Okay.
But by default, we just use kind of the global storage account that has everybody else's metrics.
All right.
So what we're actually scaling on is this average CPU metric here.
Yep.
So you can see we have metrics for each of the individual web roles, but we also have the aggregate across those three. So that's what. So this value here is kind of the value that we use to scale by. And we also, for scaling, we take the trailing hour average, which is actually the exact same value you see here in this graph. So,
Are you sure Chris didn't write the code running on this machine? Because I fear that 99% CPU usage, he's probably got one of his infinite while loops.
I'm not so good with while looping, you know? Just more loops the better, right?
Yeah.
While true.
While one. There's many different ways you can do it, right? So one other thing I can show while we're waiting for this to scale is we show a history of the instances for the past week. So that's what this graph here is.
Right.
So you can imagine I've set up scheduled auto scale. So this is between 9 and 5 each day. I have the three instances. And then the other hours of the day, I have only one instance.
Right.
So this is a great way to kind of see how has auto scale performed once you set it up. If I don't have schedule, but I just react based on CPU, then this graph will probably look pretty similar to what your CPU graph looks like.
Right.
So as your CPU goes up, your instance count will go up and vice versa.
Okay. So one of the interesting things I saw in Scott's blog when I read through it was the portal now can advise you when autoscale will result in cost savings.
Yeah.
Do we have something there that we could show people, tell them where they would find that on their
own? Sure. So if you actually go to the scale tab, I already have an example here. Autoscale is saving you up to 40%.
Okay.
So the reason that's saving 40% is because you can imagine if I didn't have autoscale, I'd have to always be at three instances.
Yeah.
But because I have autoscale, I can now sometimes be at one or some other number of instances. So it takes some sort of average of your performance and figures out how much it's saving you.
Yeah.
So I've already turned on autoscale, so I can't show that. But you can imagine this actually says autoscale could save you up to X amount if autoscale was off.
Yeah. Yeah, I think in the blog post it was like there was, you know, autoscale could save you up to $100+ per month if it was on.
Yeah.
Okay. That's cool.
And if you go to the dashboard, that same text would show up here. If autoscale wasn't already on, but in the autoscale status section, the way it works is if you are the account admin, you can actually see the exact dollar amount that autoscale would save you.
Okay.
If you're just a co-admin, you're not allowed to see billing information.
Right.
So that's why we show a percentage. So here in this subscription, I'm actually just a co-admin.
Okay.
So sometimes you'll see dollars, sometimes you'll see percentages.
Right.
That's
cool. Definitely, we're telling you when how you can save money. So,
and one of the other nice things about that feature is it tells you what your base bill is. So that means today, if I just come to the portal, I have no idea how much Cloud Autopilot 3 costs, right? Who knows how much this is? But it actually says, you know, you can save X dollars on your bill of Y.
Yeah.
So now you can just come see autoscale status. Hey, I'm spending $200 on this thing.
Yep.
So it's kind of a way of bringing that cost information right into the portal.
Yeah. Certainly something everyone will like to use,
exactly.
I'd imagine.
Definitely.
Yep. While we're waiting for 5 minutes to elapse, we can go check out some other resources that you can autoscale. So we support autoscale for websites, mobile services, virtual machines, and cloud services. So I can show websites right now. Now, for websites, we only support autoscale for the standard mode. Right. So, you know, there are three modes today for websites: free, shared, and standard.
Right.
Once you get to standard, you get your own reserved compute capacity.
Right.
So it really only makes sense to autoscale when you're kind of on your own machines, because you don't want to autoscale based on what other people are doing. And
right.
free, you only have one instance anyway, so we couldn't even scale you up, really.
Yep.
So you have to be in standard mode to scale your websites. So if I go to configure autoscale, then I can switch to standard.
All right.
And today, if you don't have autoscale on, you just have that same instance count you're used to.
Yep.
You can set it, set instance size. But if you choose to autoscale by CPU, you get a very similar UI to what we have in cloud services.
Yep.
You can choose your instance count range. So I could say I want between 2 and 5 instances, like my web role, and your target CPU. As long as you're inside this range, we won't do anything. But once you drop below or above, we'll take a scale action.
All right.
One other thing to keep in mind is we always prioritize the instance count over the target CPU percentage. So what that means is if I'm at 5 instances and my CPU is above 80%,
yep.
we're not going to take any more scale actions.
Okay.
Because you've kind of set this as the absolute limits yep. for your service. Likewise, if I'm at 2 and my CPU is really low, I'm not going to scale down any further.
Right. You could configure alerts, though, right?
Yep. So a common thing to do would be if I'm setting up autoscale at 80%, I can also set a alert for 80%. And that way, I'll get an email if I've already scaled all the way up and I can't take any more scale actions.
Okay.
Yeah.
Now, I notice there's no selector here for how often it'll check or make, take an action. So mm-hmm. how does that apply when it comes to websites?
So for websites, websites are so fast at deploying that we can take an action every 5 minutes.
Okay.
So we'll scale you up every 5 minutes until you hit your maximum. For scale down, we want to make sure that your website is always performant, so we actually have it be 2 hours on the scale down side.
Okay.
So for websites, we prioritize kind of getting that performance always in the right place.
Great.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I can hit save. It's asking me if I want to upgrade to standard, because now I'm going to have to pay some more money. Well, next, I can move on to mobile services. So for mobile services, we behave a little differently. Mobile services don't have like CPU.
Mm-hmm.
Well, they do. They do exist in a box somewhere, right?
Right.
But really, when you scale a mobile service, what you're adding is another instance to process API calls. Because when you set up a mobile service, you have all of your mobile phones. They're talking to your service. They're making API calls. So that really is the best indication of what load is
yep.
in a mobile service. So we actually just scale directly on that API call metric. So if I go to the scale tab. Just like for websites, we don't support the free mode. So we only support standard. And mobile services also has a mode called premium. So we support yep. that as well.
And those are just based off a number of API calls, right?
Yep, exactly. So in standard, I get a certain number of API calls. I think it's like 15,000 per day or something. And in premium, I get...
I think it's higher than... Is it higher than that, or is that per month?
It's 1.5 million per month.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah. Okay. So the way it's actually implemented is we look at daily. At daily, because the way you're charged is based on the maximum in a given day.
Yep.
So if I have 3 instances today and 2 instances tomorrow, today I pay for 3, tomorrow I pay for 2.
Mm-hmm.
So the month metric is more of a guideline, but we do look at each day, we evaluate what to do.
Okay.
So for here, we refer to them as units. And you can just set the range over which you want to scale. Now, during the day, mobile services, the number of API calls will only increase, right?
Mm-hmm.
So you don't really need to set a range. What we'll do is we'll just see if you're within 90% of what the number of API calls you know your mode has, we'll take the scale up action. And then at the end of the day, we'll scale you back down to your minimum.
Okay.
Because it kind of resets, that counter resets every day.
Yep.
Great.
So here I can, you know, say between 2 and 5 again, hit save,
So in the case of mobile services then, since you reset it at the start of each day,
mm-hmm.
It would make sense though if you've got an alert set up for this and that it's constantly scaling up every day, would you want to just adjust like you just did there, adjust the instance range?
So most people actually should be fine with having the bottom of the instance range at yep. 1.
Okay.
The only reason you wouldn't is if you have sudden spikes in usage
right.
and you actually need those additional compute units to handle that additional load.
Okay.
So if you have very spotty, or not spotty, but very spiky service from, you know, at 9 a.m., you have a million users that all check their phone when they wake up for your app, then you may want to set that minimum a bit higher to handle that load. But otherwise, you can just scale between 1 and 6 or whatever the total range is. For virtual machines, we support auto-scaling, but auto-scaling is always at the cloud service level. For virtual machines, the cloud service kind of acts as a load balancer for all of the virtual machines that are kind of together behind a single DNS. So when I come to the virtual machine page, I actually just go over here and click on this, and it'll take me to the cloud app that contains those virtual machines. So in this case, I have 3 virtual machine instances, and I can configure autoscale right from here. So the other difference for virtual machines is not only do all the machines you want to scale have to be in the same cloud service, they also have to be in the same availability set. So an availability set basically means all of those VMs, they're not, they kind of handle that same load, and they won't all be turned off at the same time. So that's what an availability set means. So in this case, I have set it up so that way I have 2 machines in this availability set. So I can scale anywhere from 1 to 2. Now, you may ask, well, why can't I scale to 10 or 20 or something like that? It's because for virtual machines, we don't have a way of deploying a new VM. We don't know what scripts you ran to get that VM set up. We don't know what kind of secret values are stored in that to connect your database. VM is very different from a web role or a website in that there's not a repeatable deployment that you have to bake in. So if I want to add additional VM to be able to scale across, I actually have to add it to this availability set. So here I have 2 VMs already in this set. I've recently provisioned a 3rd VM. So if I add this to the availability set, I can do that on the configure tab for that VM. And I just click the availability set, click save, and now I'll be able to scale from 1 to 3. Because I have 3 VMs in that set.
Okay. Makes sense. So you could provision, if you wanted to say the 10, you could provision 10, turn off 8 of them. You can have them off, right? And given that they're there in the availability set, you're not getting charged, of course, while they're off with the new on-off compute billing model. So that seems pretty cool.
And then AutoScale will actually turn those off when they're not needed?
It'll put them in the portal. Sometimes you'll see stop deallocated. So that just means you're not paying for it. You don't have to worry about that, but it's not handling load at that time. So for VMs, we do kind of just stop and start them, switching light switches. But it functions in the end very similar to the way it does for cloud services.
So it says three instances, 2 running, 1 starting.
So I think when you add it to an availability set, it'll restart that machine. So that's the 3rd one that's now coming into the service. So let's see, I actually don't know if I'm allowed to change the scale settings while, see, you can't change scale settings while it's in the middle of deploying something. But we can just wait for that to complete. So now you can see I can scale up to 3 instances. So here, I just have the full range. Now my CPU is pretty low on these VMs, so what you're actually gonna see is probably a scale down. So that means of these 3 VMs, one of them is gonna be stopped by auto-scale because it sees they're not really doing a lot of anything right now. Cool. So that pretty much covers the 4 services that we have for auto-scale. So why don't we actually take a look and see if any of them scaled. So I'm going to return to the cloud service. On the scale tab at the top, you may notice we have that little summary that tells you kind of the number of instances and the sizes that all of your services are at. So in that summary, hopefully, if everything's scaled properly, I should now have more than 3 for my web role and I think 5 for my worker role. So you can see it was transitioning. And let's see if, there we go. So you can see for the web role, we scaled up by 1. To 4 extra smalls. And that's because our, scale up by is one instance at a time,
yep.
and CPU is high, so it scaled up.
Okay.
And for the worker role, we now have 5 instances
okay.
Because our scale up by was 3.
Okay, great.
So
awesome.
You can see there that Autoscale scaled my app. Now, the graph is cool here because it shows you kind of pictures, and you can see yep. it's now at 4. But if you want to see the exact history of all of the actions that have been taken by Autoscale,
right.
You can go to the operation logs. So operation logs are like alerts. They're in the Management Services tab here.
Right.
And it's just right next to alerts. So operation logs show you a full history of all the actions that were taken on your service. For today, we support some resources and not others. So for operation logs, we have cloud services, storage, virtual machines, plus any actions that are taken by Autoscale,
right.
no matter what service you're in.
Okay. Are these, from a programmatic perspective, so the portal's good if you want to just come in and look at it,
mm-hmm.
if you wanted to be pulling them on-prem and slicing and dicing them however you want, do the PowerShell commandlets or anything like that support these yet?
Not yet.
Okay.
So all of the stuff that I've shown today is only available in the portal for the moment.
Right.
So
it's
alerting,
preview, of course.
Yeah, it's preview, yeah. So you shouldn't build a production service on top of it. But alerting, Autoscale, all that stuff, we don't quite have APIs ready for that yet. But we are actually working on that right now,
okay.
and there will be APIs for everything relatively soon.
Okay.
So
can we get you to commit to a date?
I work at Microsoft, so you know what the answer to that is.
good to know that it's coming though, so I think
yes.
that'll be useful for people.
And now all these features, though they're in preview, they're available to everyone right now.
Yes, that's correct. It's not a limited preview, so anybody who has access to the portal can come and set these up.
Great.
So all you'll notice is there's a little kind of annoying green tag there
yeah.
reminding you that maybe you shouldn't depend on it entirely. So the other cool thing that we'll have with the API is you'll be able to do more complex things you can't necessarily do in the portal.
Right.
So if I want to set up an Autoscale rule that has several different metrics that we don't have UI for adding in the portal, you'll be able to do that via API.
Okay.
So APIs in general offer kind of a bit more flexibility than kind of our UI.
Yep.
We're going to try to keep our UI as simple as possible so that way anybody can use it. And then if you're a power user, you can go to the API and use that.
Okay, great.
So you can see here the operation logs have loaded. And I'm going to sort by timestamp so we can see what recently has changed. So you can see we've taken Autoscale for the legacy app and for yeah. the, which is the VM set, and for the cloud service here. So for each scale action, you're going to see multiple entries. In this case, when it starts and when it completes, which are out of order. Oh, I guess actually this probably maps
yeah.
to this one. But in the operation, you can open it up and see the exact thing that we did.
Okay.
So when we take Autoscale actions, we just adjust the cloud config. So you can see it's actually base64 encoded, but
yep.
it contains the exact settings that we've applied to your service. So if you want to come back later and see exactly what Autoscale did, you can see that here in operation logs.
Okay.
Also, you may notice that the caller is not available.
All right.
That's because generally the caller is going to be the user that performed the action. So you can say, here's my email address. So you know, previously this morning I was setting all this stuff up.
Yep.
So you can see I did some stuff in the portal with my email address.
Okay.
But for Autoscale, we don't have an email associated with that, right?
Yep.
Because it's an automated engine in the back end mm-hmm. that performs all those actions. So it just didn't list it not available. So if you ever want to see all the actions that are performed by Autoscale, you could just go in here and type not available,
yeah.
and it would actually list everything that Autoscale did.
Okay.
In the future, we may make this a bit more usable. Maybe we'll say callers Autoscale or something like that.
Yeah.
But
okay.
Yeah.
Excellent.
Yeah. So I think some stuff scaled and all show up in ops logs. So yeah.
And great. Cost savings too.
Yeah.
Our devs and viewers and their managers. So all good.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
So I think that's quite a lot of information for people to digest.
Yeah.
Certainly useful stuff, worth going in and having a play with. Don't do it on your prod stuff to start with. Make sure you're comfortable with it. It is in preview.
Yeah, exactly.
But certainly worthwhile doing. So
yeah.
I think with that, we'll call it a show. So
great.
Do you have a Twitter account?
You can At Metrics Hub.
At Metrics Hub, okay.
Yeah.
Okay, and Chris?
At Chris Reisner.
And I'm at Cloud Nick. And of course, you can get us on Cloud Cover Show.
Perfect.
Like us on Facebook. Thanks for watching.